My name is Billy Fiatta, and we're talking about empowering each other today. We began talking about self in relationships yesterday, and I'll do a little recap. We talked about images, different images of the self, and the fact that we each develop a working hypothesis that starts from infancy and continues on, is developed within the family setting, and then as we move out into the community, it is shaped and formed by other forces within our environment. And that working hypothesis continues to be a part of us. And unless we begin to attend to that and check it out and change it as we grow and mature and have new experiences in life, it can become more of a negative factor for us than a positive one. So we need to go back and look at the attitudes and beliefs from our childhood and let go of some, alter some, and find some new ones that reflect more who we are at this stage of our life. I wondered about the book today that I had you read. How many had a chance to look at it? You looked. Okay. You looked. Any thoughts about the looking at it?
I found myself feeling really rebellious. I'm a student, and I thought, oh, I don't have to get a grade on this. I'm not going to do any more of this.
I found myself doing the same thing as I was going through it.
I'm sorry.
Thinking, I'm not so sure that was the best assignment today. So maybe some of you that didn't have a chance to look at it are in better shape than those that did. There's a lot of good things within the book, talking about promoting our own wellness and mutual empowerment as we work together in life. But it does take a little work to wade through and do some focusing in and thinking, and that's not exactly what one does at Holden. So there is some resistance to homework. Maybe what we'll do is use some of the ideas from the book and talk about them. Because most of you have not had a chance to really get into it. The book talks about who I am as a person, a thinking, feeling, valuing, and acting person. Those are all parts of who I am. Yesterday we talked about the self in its several dimensions in relation to the world we live in, to the people that we interact with. Today we're taking a little bit different approach, looking at who I am through the thoughts that I have, the feelings that I have, what I value, and how I act upon them. We're going to have differences. What I think and the way I feel about something may be different from the way you think and feel about it. And it's these differences that produce conflicts. And I don't have to tell you that. To produce conflicts in any partner, marriage relationships you have, friend relationships, work relationships, community groups, whatever. We run into conflicts where we lock horns when we discover that your thinking is different than mine. And what do we do about that? And I think we all could share experiences of what happens with differences. So we're going to look at some of that today. But differences are very much a part of living in this imperfect world and being imperfect persons who interact with other imperfect persons. We often or can get stuck in ruts in our thinking and feeling, particularly, I think, in relation to the people we live with, where in our intimate relationships, it's very easy to find, whether it's between husband and wife or parent and child, that we hold on to certain thoughts or feelings or beliefs, and it creates a lot of conflict between those relationships. If we're able to look at that conflict and begin to change some of our thoughts or talk about it with each other, we might be more aware of some of the resources that we have or that others have that we hadn't been aware of before. And we might find ways of working together and living together in more harmony. Okay, let's get into the book somewhat. Thinking. What is thinking?
Contemplating.
Okay. What does it do? What does your thinking do for you?
How you perceive something.
How you perceive something. And it helps then to
reason.
To reason, to think about something, to put something into some kind of configuration, to order it in some way, organize the world around you, or organize some experience, or what you're taking in through your senses, how you see, hear, feel. So thinking is important. It's the cognitive process in the psychological jargon, we call it cognitive processing. Thinking. Self-talk. Or some people have called it how one interprets something to yourself. What is it influenced by?
Your environment.
Okay.
Your past,
your present environment, the kinds of experiences that we continue to have every day, one's past experiences, which are then part of one's memory. And that can be recalled or triggered by things that are happening in our day-to-day experiences.
I would hope your own personality would have
influence. Okay. Who one is?
Something.
Now, are you talking about personality as with a genetic kind of inheritance?
Just the uniqueness of who you are. Just
like your interests, maybe.
Okay. So then it's the coming together of several things.
Yeah.
This, one's genetic inheritance, as well as maybe the kind of working hypothesis that you have that has shaped you as a family, out of your family and environment. The personality you have. Okay. Does it change? Does your thinking change?
Yeah.
I would hope so. I would hope it's always in a process of changing. Thoughts can come from several sources, from our experiences, then that we have in today, in our day-to-day living, in our experiences from our past. It comes from our senses. As I sit and look at you, I can think something about, as I'm looking at you, seeing you, I can think something about, my, that's a nice color orchid trouser that she's wearing today. I like that, you know. I'm thinking of something as I see you, as I hear things, smell things, taste things. The memory is a special storage for thoughts. Do you think thinking influences our feelings? Or are they separate functions?
No. Your feelings must be a result of what you're thinking.
Yeah. Such as if you go over something in your mind for a long time, at the end of it, you're bound to feel more inclined or disinclined towards it than you were at the beginning after having sorted it out.
You think about your feelings, too.
Right, I think it works both ways. Where thinking influences your feelings and your feelings influence what you think.
Sometimes they don't match.
And that can get you, what does that do for you?
Frustration. You kind of disagree with yourself. I mean, you may be feeling one thing, but think and believe maybe something else.
Mm-hmm. And I think we'll get into that a little bit more with beliefs, too. Now, there are different ways of thinking. We talk about thinking in concrete terms. In early childhood development, we talk about the young child thinks concretely. They're not able to think abstractly yet. So if you try to explain something in more abstract terms, they don't understand it. You have to be very direct and concrete with young children. With some adults, you need to be that way too. But there's concrete and abstract thinking. Some people do better in one area than in the other. Some people do both well. And feelings. Feelings in the psychological jargon are called the affective process. It's where depression is often referred to as an affective illness. It has to do with your feelings. So what are feelings?
Emotions that just exist. You don't make them, they just are.
They just are.
They come and go as they want, and you can't do a whole lot about them unless they've got most of them.
So you don't have a lot of control over them?
No.
They just sort of bubble up.
They're triggered by, like, other experience, you know, they're triggered by your environment and different things happen to people. So they don't just, like, pop out of no place, but something will trigger a certain emotion or feeling.
Mm-hmm. And we just heard that thinking influences our feelings. And that means memory then, too. Memory of things that have happened can influence feelings. So it's like a mood that may go along with some kind of belief we have, or some memory we have, or some action that we have taken or that we observe.
But as far as what I've heard described have been a healthy feeling state. And I think so many of us have learned not to recognize feelings, and maybe that's what you're going to be getting into. But the idea that feelings just are, that we can't control them, doesn't fit for the person who's out of sync with the feeling state. Doesn't recognize them when they happen.
I don't know, maybe when the feeling begins, if it has a definite beginning or end, maybe it just begins there, and from then on your thinking and your attitudes and your memory shape or something like that. It starts out as something that you can't control, but then if you concentrate on it and if you think about it, then maybe you can shape it into something.
Do others agree with that or disagree?
If I miss my bus, a feeling comes of irritation, of anger. It just comes. I don't, before I missed my bus, I didn't have that feeling. But then, you know, then what happens? Do I, like you say, accept that this is okay to be upset because I missed my bus? Or do I take the feeling and work it out?
So that's where the control comes in then. We can't control the bubbling up of a feeling. It just happens, it's there. So it's not right or wrong feeling. It just is a mood that...
Unless I deny that it's not okay to be irritated by missing my bus, that this isn't something natural that is coming. Because it's, quote, not appearing positive.
Okay, so that's a whole nother...
Yeah.
But it's an important one.
Yeah.
A very important...
Which is the society aspect of denying things that aren't.
Some people are so well rehearsed at the denial part of it that they don't even begin to recognize the anger when it happens.
But you do have some control over what you do with that feeling.
Like if you feel frustrated, it's because you feel bad about yourself. Like, the way you think, it's related with your feelings.
Right. So you can think badly about yourself, or you can think more positively about yourself, or you can take some action related to the feeling.
Your feelings change. Mm-hmm.
You have to figure out what you're going to do now. If you miss your bus, you have to have some control of it so you can figure out what to do.
And you can stamp your feet and make a scene. You can hit your friend because you missed the bus. I mean, you can do lots of things.
Watch
that
it.
Can turn out to be very negative. You know, but taking that feeling, you can go positive too. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But the denial of feelings that you brought up is an important one. I work a lot with women who have the problem with bulimia, and they talk about being numb to feelings, absolutely not being in touch with their feelings, and in fact literally stuffing feelings. They eat in order to stuff feelings, so it's almost like they're eating their feelings in a way, and are very much out of touch with feelings. So have to start out working at a very basic level to begin to feel again, to be in touch with feelings.
So does that come as a result of thinking about your feelings or as a result of not thinking
about it, just denying the fact that you have feelings.
That they're there. Mm-hmm. But then when you're denying it, doesn't that denial, I mean, you're recognizing that it exists and you're still thinking it?
I think it gets to the point where it becomes almost automatic that it's suppressed.
So if we use my example, then instead of doing anything about missing the bus and accepting it, you go to the candy store across the street and eat? Is that what you're saying?
Well,
to make you feel better about the situation and not deal with what really is irritating you, that you missed the bus?
Where you would just neglect to deal with that feeling at all. I mean, recognize it. Hey, I'm really irritated by this.
But instead then they would go and get something to eat to cover it up?
Right, and that it becomes an addictive pattern, actually, so that it's not a conscious thought even. It's just an automatic kind of pattern that if there's some feeling, and it's usually negative feelings, but it corresponds then to all feeling levels. Can you feel elated and feel down about the same at the same time? Same event?
Mm-hmm. At the very same time?
Mm-hmm. Or for the same, around the same person or the same experience you're having? Or?
So it's a nice day. I sit down on the park bench and read my novel and wait for the next bus. Is that what you mean? I keep needing a framework.
Okay,
to
okay. Yes, you were going to.
I think there's a way to, if you can deny your feelings, you can also revel in them and enjoy them so that you can focus on a certain feeling that you want to enjoy. And other feelings are there maybe, but maybe you focus on one. But yeah, I think there's confusion with feelings and experience.
Okay.
A concrete example might be a son going off to college, getting, you hear that he's gotten this tremendous scholarship and you are absolutely so pleased, but he was so close to you and that school is 4,000 miles away. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're just example. Elated, but you're also the other at the same time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's more mm-hmm. concrete.
Mm-hmm. Weddings too. Mm-hmm. People cry at weddings and they're happy occasions. Brides cry at weddings. Different people show feelings in different ways. Just, that's what we were saying, at a funeral or at a wedding. Some people are going to cry, some people are going to be very cheerful and happy. Going off to school. People are going to show their feelings in different ways.
What about the feeling people that hide their feelings completely or try to?
What about them? What would you say about that?
It's hard to, I find it really hard to deal with people like that. I could have a feeling, but I don't dare let my feelings show because they won't accept my feeling. This is probably not making any sense. They won't accept my feeling because they don't want to feel back.
So it's a matter of not sharing. It's really keeping oneself kind of closed off. That's part of that facade that we talked about yesterday, where I'm afraid to share.
Tell you who I am.
Right. Afraid to tell you who I am. I'm afraid to disclose some of those feelings.
Well, is it possible some people don't have the language or the ability to share feelings?
Good.
They have those skills.
That could very well be, because it has not been a part of their experience to do so. So it's something that needs to be learned, and can be learned. Because learning not to, that's a learned process, and they can unlearn and learn to express feelings. But it's like the child hasn't learned to walk, and starts to walk at a later age, it's a very slow, laborious process. It doesn't just happen.
It's similar to the young child, the boy in particular in the past years, being told to act like a man and you don't cry. You don't show your feelings. Mm-hmm. So now some of them are having a hard time showing their feelings.
It's part of, mm-hmm. part of that mm-hmm. hypothesis that you take from childhood. That's mm-hmm. what a man does. Mm-hmm. Feelings belong to you. Your feelings belong to you. They don't belong to anybody else. And they're not right or they're not wrong. They're simply your feelings. Somebody says, you shouldn't feel that way. Has anybody ever told you that?
Well, it just means that they're feeling bad because you're feeling that way.
You mean they're having a hard time dealing with your feelings.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it's a dehumanizing statement to tell someone they can't feel what they're feeling, because that's part of your humanity, is to feel what you feel.
Right.
And it's human, different from animals, and that we feel.
Mm-hmm. It's a very special part of one's humanity. You know, people don't say to you, you shouldn't look that way. Although we get a lot of information that way and through advertising and elsewhere, that we're supposed to look a certain way, which the bottom line is you shouldn't look the way you are.
I think there are a lot of caretakers too, though, that will say,
oh, you shouldn't feel so bad about that. And they mean well, but they want you to feel better instead of helping you say, well, mm-hmm. you have a right to feel bad about it. And that's the way it is.
We're really afraid of feelings. We're afraid of being in touch with our own feelings and also afraid of feelings expressed by others, particularly negative ones, and particularly anger. I don't know how many of you grew up with a kind of family rule that was probably not explicit, but you certainly knew it, that you didn't show anger in the family. You needed to be nice. Anybody grow up with rules like that?
Because anger represented being out of control. Mm-hmm.
So we learn that anger is not a good feeling.
Well, anger certainly doesn't sound like it would be a good feeling.
That's why I'm reading The Dance of Anger.
But it's one of the feelings I have, so what do I do with it?
That's an excellent question.
If we didn't have anger, we wouldn't have justice. We wouldn't have some of the movements that have happened. If people didn't get riled up about some of the inequalities, the social injustices, you know, there would be a lot of things that have happened that wouldn't have.
Well, maybe anger in itself is a negative emotion, that it's, I mean, you're directed, if you're directed at someone or at some cause, but maybe the feelings, the thoughts resulting from that anger, that, okay, all right, I'm mad at them, but they're not going to change, so I better do something about it so that I can stop being mad at them. Maybe that stems from a desire to get rid of the anger and a realization that maybe anger is not a, I mean, you're not real big on being angry at people.
Probably have to define anger and see what it really is. If we have a stereotype feeling of what the definition is, that it is such a negative, bad thing.
That's what we do with the anger.
When you get angry, I think it's one of the most important emotions to think through, where is it stemming from? Is it stemming from something you can control, or is it something that you can't control? And if you discover that it's something you can't control, then maybe it's time to find out if other people feel the same, and do other people feel the same anger? And then that's what might start a movement, or what might bring justice into the process. It depends on who's controlling the anger. Is it something you can, you know, that you're angry that you missed the bus? Well, that's something you can control. But if it's that the bus leaves 20 minutes early every day, then that's something that you can't control, and that's something to do something about.
Yeah. You need to have anger.
Pardon?
You need to have anger, otherwise you wouldn't change it.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're saying too, right? Mm-hmm.
Also, if you don't recognize it, makes you real sick.
If you don't deal with your anger.
If you don't deal mm-hmm. with it. And I think that the church has contributed a lot to people's unhealthy attitude toward anger. I think the church is beginning to say it's okay to feel, mm-hmm. but that's just beginning, I think, mm-hmm. in the last 5 years.
And we've been afraid of anger, I think, because of what the consequences of anger, how people act on their anger, mm-hmm. is frightening. Mm-hmm. You had something.
Well, sometimes anger is the first feeling that's shown outwardly, but if you can, you know, if you've got the time or to count to 10, you know, like if you've asked your son 3 times to take a shower, and the 3rd time your voice is very high, he knows you're angry. What's behind that is maybe, you know, the fact that you've had to ask him so many times, or that the anger is the top level, but lots of times there's underlying feelings and emotions that need to be dealt with. But then when you're angry, it's not your feeling that's judged, it's the actions that come from that. Like you said, hitting your friend if you missed the bus, that action, you know, has a right to be judged because it, you know, was harmful. But what comes up is anger, when in fact that's not actually what you're feeling, sadness or frustration or shame or whatever, but what people see outwardly is your anger.
And that's when it builds up, when the feelings build up and you're not really recognizing those feelings and naming them and acknowledging them.
And then some minor little thing will set you off, and people will think, what did I do? It was no big deal, and yet they don't know it's called cashing in your, like, trading stamps, you know.
And it wasn't that person you're angry at.
Right.
But that's the person that happens to get the brunt of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Just happens to be there. That happens a lot, I think, in our relationships.
But you think as parents, we don't deal rightly with anger, so I'm dealing 41 years later with the suppressed anger, and it's awfully hard to deal with it at that point. I mean, because that person has always tried to suppress their anger to their parents because they know, like in our family, that was one thing that my husband would not absolutely, he didn't want anybody to be angry. He just was a very gentle person, and anger was foreign to him. And he would not allow it in our household. So we have a family of angry people. Because they were never able to express it. They suppressed it. People would meet me, that my son worked in a gasoline station. And he was a teenager, you know, with all the anger and frustration of teenagers. And everyone said, hey, he is the most perfect person. I mean, he's so nice and so kind. I said, you ought to live with him. I mean, he suppressed it. Mm-hmm. You know, he has always, all his life, been able to suppress it. Not always, because he's very volatile.
Well, good for you that you're recognizing and beginning to make some changes for yourself. You can't change it for your family, but you can begin to make some changes for yourself.
Because I always said to myself, once before I die, I would like to know why. You know, and so finally, I guess I'm dealing with it now. A little late, but
it's never too late. Anger is really a difficult, I think the most difficult emotion that we have to deal with. So our feelings, when we're bothered by them, it helps to recognize the feeling that you're experiencing and to do something about it. Talk to somebody about it. I often give assignments to students to do some journaling and writing about it when they get in touch with their feelings. If they can't, you don't always have a friend there to talk to. But if you can get it down in writing, at least you're getting it out. You're not just letting it stew around. But naming the feeling, and not just ignoring it and say, oh, well, it'll pass, forget it. I was angry. Now, then I have to decide, do I do anything with that? Being able to be direct in communicating your feelings with the people you live with. When you do that, I get angry or I get irritated, rather than allowing it to build up and then the anger explodes at a time when you're least expected. Feelings include your sense of belonging to or your sense of being isolated from the persons that are important to you. Feelings connect you with people, or they isolate you from people. Feelings involve your motivation for what you want to do. If you're not feeling very good about something, you know, you're not very motivated to do anything about it. In our feelings, we experience bonds or relationships with others with whom we live and work. If I'm feeling good about my work situation, the people I work with, I'm going to invest more in that situation. Okay, let's go on to beliefs. What are beliefs? I think you all have them. How would you define beliefs?
Part of it is what we value.
What we value. Okay, something that we think of as being real or true or it's important. Okay. So it's a kind of framework that we have for thinking about something. A belief. What about attitudes?
It's how you act about things.
How you act about them. Now, attitudes is still in the thinking process, isn't it? What we think about something, an attitude we have.
But it has a feeling with it, too, that makes that thought intense, makes it my own. I don't know, that just popped into my head. I have to think about it.
Maybe we could look at it as a kind of collection of beliefs. Beliefs
ownership
that...
Ownership of belief.
Pardon?
An ownership of a thought.
Ownership of a thought? Okay, that's a good way to say it. An ownership of a thought. So it's something that has become yours in defining what is important and real for you.
Well, maybe, I don't know, I would think that attitudes would be like a smaller form of beliefs, possibly. Like, say, if you have an attitude towards something, that's just really how you feel about it at a certain time. But it can be elevated to a belief if you really think it over and shape it up. And then once you really analyze it or whatever, then it becomes a belief instead of an attitude. Because I don't know, I personally think of attitudes as maybe like just like without knowing all the facts, how you feel about it.
So what would you have some attitudes about?
Right now, I don't know, something that I know nothing about, say like...
What about food? You have any attitudes about food?
Yeah, like... Okay, I don't like the food here, but I know it's nutritious. I that's just my gut level reaction is, whoa, okay, I don't want to eat this stuff. But that's just sort of an attitude. And when I've realized that, okay, all right, this is chock full of vitamins and minerals, and it's going to be really good for me. Then possibly if I would have to find a way to say my attitude, okay, well, bugger you, you don't matter, because I figured out that this is really going to be a good thing. And except that, no, that's not really a belief, though. How can you believe that it's good for you?
Yes.
You have to live so many years, I think, to have attitude, so it would be what thoughts have accumulated over the years, and therefore they become an attitude. But attitudes can change with additional learning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it is a kind of collection then of beliefs that you have accumulated over the years and out of your experiences.
But you can look at children and say one has a good attitude towards life and one has a negative attitude towards life. Mm-hmm. And they can be quite young.
I think one of the most difficult attitudes and feelings to deal with is one of the difference.
Say that again.
That one of the most difficult attitudes and even feelings is that of indifference. A person who is neither positive towards something and yet expresses nothing negative either. It's always hard for me to believe that someone doesn't feel a little bit one way or a little bit the other way.
I read indifference is an insult. Forgiveness is getting revenge, really. Say it's in a relationship type thing. And indifference is an insult. About that, I think you're right on with indifference. They may have a belief in an attitude, but if it's not brought out, it's actually an insult because it keeps things stuck.
Yeah, you're just saying to the other person who you're indifferent to, I'm better than you are, and I really don't give a rip what you do to me because it doesn't matter.
So it's an insult.
Many of us struggle, maybe you do too, to keep our actions consistent with our attitudes and beliefs. And I think you were about that a little bit before when there's some disparity there. Which of your attitudes help you take the actions that you want to take?
You decided that you can change that. You can do something maybe about it. I don't know that you can, but that you should feel that you can. Because if it's a thinking, or if it's a feeling, or if it's a anything, you can mostly change that. We're talking about emotions that we have. Mm-hmm. And every emotion that we have can be changed. To a certain extent. I mean, it comes out a certain way, but if we, I'm not explaining it very well, but.
If you have like an emotion and then it's just sort of bubbling up and you're not doing anything about it, and then your attitudes and your thoughts will shape that emotion to something that would be, something that would be positive.
Okay. Do you all know the Serenity Prayer?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good one to remember. Let's say that. Help me to
grant serenity
to
accept the
things
I
cannot change.
Courage to
change the things I can.
And the wisdom to know the difference.
It's a good motto to keep above your mirror in the bathroom, I guess. It gets complicated when we start talking about all these different aspects, doesn't it? I'm going to add another one. What about values?
Maybe elevated beliefs.
Elevated beliefs.
That's a good one.
Elevated beliefs. Anybody else? What do you value? What gives meaning? Value is some meaning ascribed.
Important thing.
What is important? What is best? What do you think ought to happen?
But you always have to mirror that against something. A value has to be mirrored against something. You can't just pick up a value out of the air. It has to be, I think. You have to bounce it back, and when it comes back, then it becomes a value because.
Yeah, like you can't just say that maybe you value human life just because it sounds real nifty until you see the other side of it, and then.
And you bounce till it bounces back, till it's mirrored somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay, so values are kind of a guide or a standard, a kind of measuring stick that we use for ourselves and for our relationships. A standard for what we choose to do and what we choose not to do. And we make value judgments in all parts of our life.
It seems all of these things add up to your attitude, doesn't it? Your values, what you believe, and your emotions help to form your attitude toward forgiving.
They're all kind of separate, and yet they're all part of the whole. So that's why we're having kind of difficulty separating them out and defining them and seeing them as separate parts of who we are. But values grow out of our experience and our thinking about those experiences. That's where they come from. Like the value of the work ethic, that one should work hard, and if I have that value, I'm going to work hard myself, and I'm going to expect the people I work with to do the same. I value work.
That's putting your values on someone else.
My expectations are that, right. And that often happens, doesn't it?
And you should let everyone have their own values. But it's not easy to do.
That's pretty hard to do, yes, in a group situation, isn't it? Maybe we could talk a little bit about what are some of the experiences that have shaped your values.
You don't want to be here all night, do you?
How long do we go on?
We want to have a good night, right?
Anybody got any thoughts on that?
Probably family experience is the most important. I mean, the values you see your parents accept, you know, the whole day. I think that's probably the key thing for most people.
I would think so. And then as you branch out into peer groups.
Yeah, and then maybe even
church.
Reading the newspaper and seeing what other
media. Aha. Uh-huh. That's probably a big influence.
Yeah. I think television is a giant influence on some of our young people nowadays. And the values that they're seeing in any number of the shows that are on.
And they come in conflict. Then they come in conflict with the values that they have from the family.
They pick up values that they think are values.
That's right, because they're the heroes. We don't have any real heroes right now except the present ones that they watch on Miami Vice or any number of those things. And, you know, you want to be like the hero. Whether he kills somebody or jumps in and out of bed with people or, you know, whatever it is, those are the values that the kids are picking up. And maybe even some impressionable adults.
So it really then does come in conflict with the values that you may have from your family.
Well, maybe they need a time to test to find out whether it's true for them. If it's true for them, maybe they need it. Everybody needs space to test and figure out for themselves what's important for themselves.
But that's such a... That's abandoning them to when Pastor Erlander comes here, he'll probably be speaking on
values.
Going to talk about the influences that we don't even know. He takes it from Ephesians, and he said there's our principalities and powers that are out there. And he said, what you do, he said, make the sign of the cross and turn off the TV set. He said, that's the only way you're going to get away from the influence. And I've had a mental breakdown once, and the things that influenced me were things that you would not believe. I was a proofreader in a newspaper. I had to read all kinds of garbage when I had to proofread. Believe me, that influenced you. The music that you hear, you may not check your kids' music. Some people are extremely sensitive to music. I am. I can get a song in my head and I cannot get it out of there, and it could be a song that is not one that I want to have in my head.
So we're always confronting other values that may be in conflict with our own.
I'm saying in that conflict is how we know ourselves as we're talking.
So that we need to be open to testing out other values in order to see what we value for ourselves.
Otherwise, I know that's true for me. I was a sponge soaking up all my parents' values. And then when it came into a big clash, and it was very, very hard to figure out who was me and who was them. And it couldn't be my value unless I did that.
So it's only as our own values are challenged that we began to look at them in a way and claim them as our own.
Yeah.
This happens in traveling, doesn't it? You people have probably traveled to other places where there's a real culture shock. when you discover that other cultures have different values. And what do you do with that? They're not the same as us. Their values are different than mine. My husband and I had a group of students that we took to the Middle East for 5 months. And we encountered some very different values in the Middle East, particularly in the Arab culture. Americans are great for being nice to strangers. I mean, on our streets, you know, you'll smile at somebody, you'll say hi to somebody you probably don't know very well. You don't do that there, particularly women. If women smiled at a male in a public place, it was an invitation, like a prostitute. Well, that's...
Don't be in trouble.
It's a very different value. We value being nice and smiling as a way of relating to people. That's not the same way that it was interpreted there. So different ways of different values that you encounter, and you have to stop and reevaluate your own situation.
Isn't it 5:15? We have lunch. Yeah. It's difficult, though, I think, to. We have our values and standards, and we think that they are absolutely right. Mm-hmm. When we see somebody else doing something that we think is not right, it's hard to work through sometimes.
It is.
We know that we're going to just automatically gut reaction impose mm-hmm. our own ideas of what is right or wrong.
Well, in our own minds,
yeah.
To begin with, I don't know. You know, it goes to even some of the, just getting back to television and how impressionable we are with television, the people with power and money on any number of the shows, the adult, I don't even know the names of some of them, with the flashes. Yeah, some of those, yeah.
Which one did you say?
Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some of those, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
People just keep that up. Well, what's it doing to us? I mean, are we then saying, well, here we are up in Holden Village being, worried about justice and peace and eating the stuff on the table, all those things. Are we wrong then? Don't you think we should have power and money?
Well, no, we
all kinds of stuff.
we made our own value judgments that okay, power and money are all well and good, but
differences. Differences in one-to-one relationships, intimate relationships, and family relationships, and community, and
it breaks down to two things. You cannot control yourself or anyone else with two things. You cannot have power, and you cannot have love in the same place. You either have one or the other. You're either trying to control somebody with power, or you are trying to control them with love. Either one of them is a control, but you cannot have both things.
To me, power means influence over other people, not necessarily negative influence, but also positive influence. I would say that Holden Village is a very powerful place. It has influence over thousands of people every year.
And the love is there, too.
That's my definition of power. So you can have power and love the same. If it's a positive influence and not a negative influence, power is
but
a
you always control people control with power.
That's the negative part.
Well, maybe,
that
doesn't necessarily need to be negative.
But that's only according to what we feel is right.
Maybe that moves us into that in the next step, which is action. So we've got thinking, feeling, beliefs, attitudes, values, and action. We are acting individuals too. What we do either to change, action is what we do, either to change things or to keep things from changing. And action reflects our feelings, our thinking, and our values, how we act. We feel best when there's some harmony between this. But often, I think as Tracy was saying, there is some disparity there, and it feels like it's out of sync. Your thinking influences what you do, and what you do influences your thinking. And how you feel influences what you do.
Well, I think everything that we've talked about influences what you do. I mean, all the feelings, thoughts, beliefs, attitudes, actions, well, I mean, attitudes and values, whatever, the stronger mm-hmm. they are, the stronger your attitude.
So you are a person who, you and I are both people, who have thoughts, feelings, beliefs, values, and actions. We're wonderful, complex human beings. And it's important to remember that that's not only me, but that's you and all the people around us are people that are wonderful, complex human beings that have thoughts, feelings, beliefs, values, and actions. And they may not be the same. They aren't going to be the same as ours. So how do we live together? How do we live together and relate to each other in a way that allows you to be you and me to be me, without letting our differences separate us, but seeing the differences as resources that can help us to work together and help us to create an environment that is more interesting than the one I'd create by myself, because you have different ideas about things than I do. You have different feelings about things. How can we work together?
With a gawpy love, I guess. Unconditional. To love a person, not the behaviors or their feelings or values, to try to love that unique, lovable, capable person, not necessarily uh-huh. what you observe them do or hear them say, but
I think too, you know, just you know, it's important for one to believe strongly in themselves and their attitudes, their feelings, their all those things you just mentioned. But to believe that the other ways aren't necessarily wrong. I think there's a difference between something being totally wrong and something being different than what you believe.
So that really involves listening to another person, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Even when that person has different thoughts or feelings or beliefs than my own, it's important to listen and to hear where the other person is coming from and to share where I'm coming from. And then to see if somehow together we may come out differently. But to accept that person as a unique individual, even though the person is different from me.
Jesse Lair has a book called I'm a Wonder and You're a Wonder Too.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to live. You're going to have to live with these people that have some differences. You're going to have to work with them. You're going to have to work on committees. You're going to have to work in jobs. And somehow finding a way to see them as a unique and person just like me, only having some different ideas about things, and seeing that as a resource rather than as a divisive. I guess we're going to have to stop for today. Feel like we just got started. There's a lot more we can talk about. Those of you that do have the book, can go on and learn more about how we empower each other in this process of working and living together. Thank you for coming and for sharing.